I'd like to thank Monica Gagnon, Michelle Simon, and my colleagues at Corporate Accountability International, with whom I've been working to develop strategies by which community groups can work to protect communities from the harmful practices of fast food companies. Today, I want to suggest a process for looking at the global footprint of a multinational corporation, and I want to suggest a way that public health researchers can begin to track the overall health impact of the various ways that corporations operate in the world. It's kind of taking Bill Wyss' presentation and looking at a particular company. I do have one relationship I want to disclose, and it leads me to a suggestion. I had the privilege last week of speaking about some of these matters at the Occupy Wall Street demonstrations in New York City, and there's a practice that they do at Occupy Wall Street. When someone says something that you agree with or you like, you go like this. And when someone says something you disagree with or that upsets you or you don't like, you go like this. And I've always been upset at APHA meetings how much time we spent on sitting in our butts. So I'd like to suggest that for the remainder of this presentation and maybe at the other sessions, if you hear something you like, if you hear something you don't like or you disagree with, and maybe it's also a way of beginning to change our brains so that we get more active and less passive, which I think is a really important step forward. And these are some of the questions that I hope we'll be looking at with a focus on one particular corporation, McDonald's. So let's begin by just looking at some descriptions. And think about the power that goes with feeding 60 million people a day, with employing more than a million people, and of taking in $24 billion a year. And so we'll try and look at some of the ways that that power that McDonald's Corporation has translates the mechanisms and pathways by which that influences population health around the world. And just to give one example of the global reach, The Economist magazine has created what they call the Big Mac Index, which shows how much a Big Mac costs in different parts of the world, adjusted for current currency valuation across space. And in July 2001, a Big Mac, known in India as a Maharaja Mac, was $1.89, but in Argentina, it was $6.16. And note the relatively low cost in countries like China, India, and Mexico, where obesity and diabetes rates are rising rapidly. McDonald's affects health, I would suggest, in four important areas. One, by its consumer practices, the food it sells. And in my work looking at how corporations impact health, I've looked at a specific set of practices across industries, how they design products, how they then market them, the mechanisms they set up for retail distributions, and how they decide what to price. I'm going to call those business practices. The second is environmental practices. The third is labor practices. And finally, I'm going to look at political practices, some of the things, again, we've already heard spoken about here. And let's start by looking at consumer health. About one in four Americans eats fast food every day. And calories eaten away from home have increased from 23.4% in 1977 to about 40% in 2006. So almost a doubling of the food that we eat outside the home, and a significant proportion of that is in fast food companies. In fact, there was a study by Poti et al. In a journal of the American Dietetic Association in 2011 that the percentage of calories that children get from fast food is now greater than the calories they get in school. That's an astonishing statistic. And what does it say about our society that we've arranged things so that more of the nutrient intake of children who spend the vast majority of their daytime hours in school comes not from the school food served by the National School Lunch and Breakfast Programs, not totally separate from McDonald's, of course, but from outside fast food companies. Richard Adams, and in recent months, McDonald's has called attention to the healthier foods they're serving, salads and so on. But Richard Adams, a former McDonald's executive who now works as a consultant for franchisees, says the average store sells about 50 salads a day, 50 to 60 premium chicken sandwiches, a little bit lower in fat and calories, compared with 300 to 400 double cheeseburgers from the dollar menu. And so the revenues of McDonald depend overwhelmingly on beef, French fries, and soda. The foods that are the products of the industrial food system in America, and as we'll see, also heavily subsidized. And the scale of McDonald really gives it a global impact. A detailed analysis of the global supply chains of McDonald's is beyond the scope of our session today. But understanding how companies like McDonald's, Walmart, Pepsi, and others can use their global market power to shape the food environments for not just the people who walk through the door, but everybody else, I think is a really important public health task. Companies like McDonald's also have an impact on the environment. One of the most important elements is its contribution to the world's rising rate of meat consumption, a contributor to global warming, habitat destruction, and food insecurity in many places. Now, for the most part, McDonald's executives don't sit down and say, "How can we harm world health today?" I don't think it happens that way. But they sit down and say, how can we fulfill our legal mandate to return a profit for our investors, to grow market share? And the business model that they have set up ensures that the decisions they make undermine rather than support human health. Companies like McDonald's also have a very important impact on labor. McDonald's is really the prototype of a 21st century employer. Its wages and working conditions encourage high turnover, and so you don't have workers staying with you a long time. The part-time hours that they rely on means that they don't pay benefits. The high turnover discourages unionization. Its franchise system further undermines collective bargaining. In the U.S., as many as 1 in 10 adults have started their working career at McDonald's, an astonishing statistic. And so they also play a role in socializing people to say, this is what work is like. This is what work in America and in the world in the 21st century will get you. These quotes from McDonald's illustrate their defense of their practices and their notion. And their business model, again, is not based, in fact, on the content or quality of the food, but on developing a mass market, which they do by keeping labor prices low, keeping food prices low, and then expanding around the world in exactly the way that Bill talked about before. Their decision to market, for example, apple dippers rather than whole fresh apples continues to further undermine young health. Apple dippers with low-fat caramel sauce, if you want to add it, has about 100 calories, 15 grams of sugar. A whole raw apple has half the calories, two-thirds the amount of sugar, 20% of the fat, and 5 milligrams less of cholesterol. So even when they turn to fruits and vegetables, they do it in a way that doesn't support health and certainly doesn't encourage the health habits that could help us to avoid the epidemics of chronic diseases that we're facing today. Through their marketing, again, McDonald's illustrates the way that modern global corporations, only a part of their advertising is spent on radio, television, and newspapers. In addition, they have websites, and you can see here how many young people they attract. Overall, they spend about 29 cents per person per year for advertising. And think of those resources and compare it to the resources available to the Food and Drug Administration, to the World Health Organization, and to other forces protecting public health in the world today. Now, you'd think philanthropy would be an area that would not be controversial. In fact, Ronald McDonald's House Charity has donated more than $465 million to children's causes since its founding. Every night, more than 6,400 families with critically ill children stay in the 300 Ronald McDonald houses close to hospitals in 52 countries around the world. And knowing people who have spent time in those houses with their seriously ill children, it's a really important service, and people will speak positively of that experience. But there's something bizarre about a company whose main business is selling products, which is feeding the world's epidemic of diabetes and other chronic diseases, taking the profits from that and dedicating them to helping children facing cancer and other diseases. Another important priority for Ronald McDonald's charity is to promote programs that support physical activity. And certainly physical activity is part of the response to the childhood obesity that their products contribute to. But it reminds me of the tobacco industry sponsoring stress research and people working against stress in the 50s and 60s, saying that stress that's causing all these illnesses, not tobacco, and that what McDonald's hopes by emphasizing physical activity is to take the focus off the food they're serving to 60 million people a day. In the last 12, 15 years, McDonald's has contributed about $12 million, half about in campaign finance, and unfortunately, the largest recipient of a campaign donation for McDonald's was a guy named Barack Obama, but they've contributed more to Republicans, and they've in fact opposed some of the initiatives of the Obama administration to better regulate the food practices of fast food companies. And the scope of their resources enables McDonald's and other fast food companies and the trade associations that they support to have a much stronger voice in Washington and in state capitals in setting food policy than do public health advocates or the, whatever it is, 12, 14,000 people here at these meetings today. Ray Kroc, the founder and investor who developed McDonald's, said, if you had a dollar to spend in marketing, spend it on kids. And I think another part, so two parts of the McDonald's business plan are, one, cheap labor, you know, have a high turnover, employ young people, so you pay as little as you need to, don't pay a lot of attention to health and safety, don't pay a lot of attention to benefits. The other part of their business model is to buy cheap food, you know, to look at the food that is subsidized by the subsidies that their lobbyists have promoted, the industrial food system, no matter what the nutrient content of those cheap foods are, or their contribution to the health problems. And the third element of the business plan is market to children. You know, market to children so you develop lifetime customers. Look for ways to bypass parents. And I would argue that that's fundamentally an immoral business plan on all those three fronts. And yet, because of the system of laws we have in this country, it's an acceptable business plan. So if you look at some of the statements of Jim Skinner, who's the CEO of McDonald's and earns about $10 million a year, he provides a very strong defense of their practices and says that they're in fact making a contribution and offering people choices. But if you look at independent scientific assessments of even their ability to keep their own promises, most of those studies show that they fall short. This particular one comes from an article that Alexandra Liu and Marion Nessel and a colleague published in the Journal of Public Health Policy. And every one of the promises that McDonald's had made was in fact undermined by their practices. So I want to end by describing briefly two campaigns designed to change the practices of McDonald's. One by Corporate Accountability International to retire Ronald, arguing, as I said, that it's an immoral business plan, and they've been organizing in communities, getting scientists to support that claim, and to say this is not an acceptable business model. And it's a long-term campaign, but Corporate Accountability International can claim to have sent Joe Camel, to participate in sending Joe Camel to the retirement home, and so they hope they'll be able to have Ronald join him there soon. Another example, the San Francisco City Council recently passed a law forbidding McDonald's and other fast food companies from giving children toys as a way of luring them into places with unhealthy meals. And they said you can only give away toys if your meals meet certain nutritional standards. And, of course, McDonald's is suing them for that. So some recommendations of how can communities protect families, children, from the harmful influence of fast food companies. First, changing school companies. 20% of schools in the United States sell fast food on school grounds. Second, restricting some of the places where fast food corporations can operate. Los Angeles has set a moratorium preventing any new fast food companies from opening in downtown where there are high rates of obesity and few alternatives for healthy food. Third, to limit the marketing of unhealthy products to children. It's only relatively recently that the Supreme Court has significantly expanded the protection of commercial speech and now political speech. We need to roll that back. We need to say that this was not something the Founding Fathers planned. And certainly, if we give corporations the right to speech, to political and commercial speech, then we also should have the right as entities to hold them accountable for the cost of that speech imposes on society. So thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing from you.